I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the American compact is that we will all live under the rule of law. That means no individual, regardless of status of power, is above the law, and we are all equal in the eyes of the law. This ensures a functioning democracy by binding government officials and citizens alike to a common legal framework. It promotes accountability, fairness, and the peaceful resolution of disputes. The opposite of the rule of law is authoritarianism, tyranny, and the creation of a class who, they don't have to follow the law, they get special treatment. Under the presidency of Donald Trump, many are asking if we are weakening the rule of law. Is it breaking down, and are we falling into the rule of one man? PBS Frontline explores Trump's power and the rule of law. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The average American should care deeply about the status of the rule of law because it protects your freedoms, your rights, your safety, regardless of political party, background, or social status. The rule of law means no one is above the law, not even the president. It prevents leaders from using their office for personal gain or punishing their enemies unjustly. Without this, a president could silence critics, rig elections, or abuse government agencies without consequences. Whether you're wealthy or working class, liberal or conservative, the rule of law ensures equal protection under the law. It gives everyone the right to a fair trial, due process, and legal recourse if they're wronged. Your freedom of speech, religion, and privacy all rely on laws that cannot be arbitrarily ignored or changed by whoever holds power simply because they don't like you. If leaders could bend the law to suit their needs, your rights would depend on politics, not principles. Business contracts, property rights, and public trust in government all depend on consistent, predictable legal systems. Weak rule of law leads to corruption, chaos, and the loss of public confidence and hurting jobs and communities. So right now, there is plenty of evidence that the rule of law in the United States is being attacked, broken down, weathered. And now on PBS Frontline, tomorrow night, they explore how President Trump has been actively weakening the rule of law in the United States to expand his power, reward his enemies, reward his allies, and punish his enemies. We're joined by Michael Kirk. He's the founding producer of PBS Frontline and the producer and director of Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. Michael Kirk, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you, David.
So what does it mean for the United States to operate under the rule of law, and how has Trump changed that standard?
I think it's true, if you look back at our history, that presidents have always wanted more power, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And what they'll do to gain more power is often a subject of great fear by lawyers, by civil libertarians, by their opponents, by the people inside their own administrations. This particular president, coming as he does on the heels of, let's say, since Watergate, a concerted effort in America to constrain the president's ability to use the formidable powers that the executive has in American society, this particular president has decided not in a, it's come out as a sort of chaotic, ongoing struggle that you pick up on the news, and it's frightening and confusing. But the fact is, we've taken the last 6 months to really pay close attention to what he's done and to try to figure out if there's a plan here, what's the idea. And I think in the case of what President Trump is doing, he's really testing how far he can go to arrive at a place that Republicans and Democrats have wanted to be as president for a long, long time.
Well, President Trump, he does have the absolute pardon power. And he has been using that pardon power. He used it in his first term as well, very aggressively. And you show us in the documentary on Frontline how he used it to pardon the January 6th or provide clemency to the J6er Capitol attackers, including 14 far-right figures, including the leaders of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. How does that using that pardon for the January 6ers, how does that expand his power and bring down, weather down the rule of law?
The way that we've interviewed a lot of the people, a couple of the people who are really inside advisors of his, and lots of others who, Republicans who have witnessed what's happening or support what he's doing. You have to go back a little bit to say, when Trump lost the election to Joe Biden and left the White House, some would say, in disgrace. Certainly his own people said he was a dead political figure based on 2 impeachments, 34 trials that were raised, charges and indictments that were raised, guilty verdicts by juries. He was headed for prison. He also didn't have much political support. And during those 4 years, he waited, he worked, he met with groups from the Heritage Foundation and other places, trying to figure out what were the best first steps. How would you come out if you won the presidency? What would happen, and how fast could you move? And one of the first things on the list that he promised his supporters and that he acted on the day of his inauguration was the release of what he called the people who have been persecuted by the Justice Department in
the hostages.
Warfare.
He called them hostages.
and hostages. He wrote executive orders and clemency writs right at that very first evening, sitting in the Oval Office, for 1,500, for, as he said in the film, for every single hostage, every single person persecuted from January 6th. It was, I think, part of a number of demonstrations that he and his supporters wanted to make to signal this was the first step of many, many that would be what Steve Bannon referred to as the days of thunder, where they would go out and demonstrate his newfound, from his perspective, power.
But there are people who see that pardon of the January 6ers and others who attacked the Capitol and tried to overthrow the government for Trump that day as that he had the immunity power and he was going to use it for anyone who would break the law to protect Trump.
Yes, it's been the first steps, and on really for as long as the last 6 months, he's been exacting a retribution and revenge for what he considers to be the unjust lawfare attacks on him when he was president of the United States. And the list and the actions that we chronicle are all designed to demonstrate and test in court the various things he wants to do to try to prove that the president should have extreme power in all of these matters. And it's been fascinating to watch it and fascinating to talk to the people who are both close to him and others who are very worried about the implications of it, and to find out exactly what was going on, because it was so chaotic, David, that it was hard for any of us to know what was it about, but it wasn't all chaos. There was a plan, and we found the project that goes back decades, all the way back to Richard Nixon and even through Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, all the way up. They're acting with a very real purpose, and that purpose is manifest certainly in those early pardons.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue talking about the Frontline documentary that airs tomorrow night on PBS in San Antonio and KLRN. It'll air at 9 p.m., Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. If you've got a question or comment about these observations of what you see, what you fear, what's going on with Trump and the rule of law, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and The Source continues right after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on KLRN in San Antonio and across the country on PBS, Frontline's latest documentary airs, Trump's Power and the Rule of Law, taking an examination about how there's been this evolution of the expansion of presidential power and a big leap under the Trump's second term, how he has done things designed in order to expand the presidential power, in order to reward his allies, punish his enemies, and to basically be able to do whatever it is he thinks he ought to do to our country. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255, and join the conversation with Michael Kirk. He's the founding producer of PBS Frontline and is producer and director of Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. Let's go to Tony on the phones. And Tony, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, I can't sound the alarm here with what's going on, because if you look through history, you're constantly seeing other times in history where things have really gotten extreme. And then it's taken a while. It's taken, you know, years for things to kind of settle down and come back to normality. So with the Supreme Court throughout its history has made terrible decisions. You know, you can go back in history and see those, some of those terrible decisions was like, you know, separate but equal, Plessy Ferguson, that type of thing. Later on, they corrected it 50, 60 years later, right? So whatever's happening now is happening in the past. And ultimately, this is a power grab for the federal government and for state governments, and that's what it's about. It's about ending the franchise, right? There's really not a clear democracy here, because with gerrymandering, they know the result of the vote before it's even cast.
All right,
and money is what decides who the winner is.
All right, Tony, thank you for the call. So Tony brings up history. And let's go back to Watergate in the 1970s, Richard Nixon's president. He used the presidential power to investigate, used IRS on people, the FBI, and do the Watergate break-in. There was the cover-up, and he, you know, resigned in disgrace. And what was the reaction to that?
Yes, I mean, this is probably the genesis moment of when this theory that was really abroad in the land by conservatives, the more conservative you were, the more you believed that the executive should have a lot of power, that this was vested in the Constitution back from the very beginning of the creation of the United States, that the executive would have a lot of power. Nixon really believed that. He believed a phrase, if the president does it, it can't be illegal. And he acted on that during Watergate. There was finally a moment where the Supreme Court said, no, you have to hand the tapes over, Mr. President. You're out of line. It's against the law. And President Nixon had to make a decision. Do I defy the court or not? He chose not to, in a real moment of crisis for the democracy, and resigned. And when he left, Congress took over as much power as they could from the White House. They were afraid when they learned by watching Nixon how much was really in the hands of the executive if he wanted to use it. So they constrained every president, 5, 6, 7 presidents since then, as much as possible with regulations, with them taking over more and more of the agencies in the government. They worked for the president. The president, under the Constitution, is supposed to have power over all of these things, but the Congress really took over a lot of it. Congress is supposed to spend money, is supposed to enact laws that have money. The president spends the money. to enact the laws that Congress passes. Well, in Nixon's case and others, those constraints were not something they wanted to have. Now, post-Watergate, presidents were pretty locked down until 9/11, when George W. Bush said, I've got to have flexibility. I've got to be able to move fast. I can't be constrained by all these regulations. And there were people in his administration who said, yes, that's right. People who worked at the Justice Department and felt that it could be authorized to do the things they did, some of which resulted in torture and the black sites and other things that we all remember from that time period. So once again, the argument was, could a president have that much power to spy on us, to do other things, and Congress jumped back in and tried to tighten it? It is in the aftermath of that that Donald Trump and the people around him decided that, no, it was time to open things up again and let a president. The world needs it. The American people who are angry about the power of the deep state need it. And we're going to go do everything we can to push the boundaries and put all of that power and trust in Donald Trump that he will make this happen. And that's what you're seeing happen before your eyes right now, is that fight, even among Republicans and even among conservatives. How far can Trump go? How far should he go? And that's manifest in a number of things you see happening before you right now, especially in Texas with the illegal immigration issues and other things that the president is pushing so hard on to test how far he can go without having to ask for permission from the courts or the Congress.
Well, I want to hop onto this idea that you put up here about a conservative and their relationship with the rule of law. And I would love to hear from listeners, especially if you are a conservative and you think that the rule of law is critically important. I mean, it seems to me if a true conservative would embrace the idea of the rule of law, that we come up with laws and they are applied equally to everyone, and that we don't have a royalty who are exempt from laws because of who they are, what their last name is. And, you know, this is something that a conservative, a true conservative would say, this is the way, this is a true American idea. This is the a foundation from the founding fathers. And any conservative who doesn't believe that is a fake conservative, in my opinion.
Well, in fact, David, we have in the film former very renowned conservative United States Court of Appeals Justice J. Michael Luttig. We have Peter Kiesler, who was the Attorney General acting Attorney General under George W. Bush. Ty Cobb, who was one of Trump's lawyers the last go around. They all feel very strongly the way that you've just articulated it. So there are conservatives, many conservatives in the country, who think at this moment Trump is going too far. They're very sharply critical of him. And those people talk in our film as well.
Let's go to Billy. The number to call in is 833-877-8255. And Billy, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just wanted to point out that, you know, our system was designed from the very beginning to have three co-equal branches of government, and they all check each other and balance each other, checks and balances. Now the dynamic is such that you've got rogue judges that are ruling, making huge rulings in favor of Trump, especially on all of his criminal activities that could have, you know, disqualified him from even running. But like, if you get the right judges in the right place to side with him, then he just keeps going with all of his corruption. And then now Congress is so scared to vote against him because of the backlash and them getting primaried that they won't go against him. And so he's just got this, he's like a tornado just going through all branches and taking over, grabbing power, and everybody's scared. And all we need is a few people with some spines in the right places, like maybe a John McCain that, you know, thumbs down on the Obamacare. We just, like, I can't believe people like Mitt Romney, you know, some of these other moderates can't vote against him. It's just, it makes Congress feckless. And now the Supreme Court's even ruling in his favor on almost everything. So that's a problem. That's what I got. Thanks.
Well, Billy, thank you for that. So you do, Michael Kirk, in your Frontline documentary, you talk about how Congress has not really provided oversight or provided the checks or balances to Donald Trump's. And why is that?
Well, of the many things that were just said, it is true that there is a showdown. What is happening? It doesn't seem like it, but there really is a pretty substantial showdown happening in America. Hundreds of judges, federal judges from both Obama-appointed and Biden-appointed judges, and also Trump-appointed judges, and even Reagan-appointed judges, are finding against the president on many, many, many of the cases that have been brought forward by lawyers in the last 6 months. So Trump is losing on at the district court level a lot more than he's winning in his effort to try to expand his power. Congress, which usually, and according to the Constitution, as your caller appropriately said, Congress is supposed to be a check to the president, but that is not happening. And that often doesn't happen if the president's party is also if the Republicans in this case have a president who's a Republican, well, they're not going to go against their own president. And the same is true if the Democrats were there and they have a Democrat. That's part of what's great about the American constitutional idea, what our democracy is, which is this checks and balance. But but if the president's party is dominant in the House and the Senate and the president wants to go, they usually go forward with it. Lately, this particular group has gone forward with the president without much dissent. The court does not have an army, does not have any way to enforce what they do. It's just all of our support for the court and feeling that they're doing the right thing that keeps them in power. And in this case, that's where the test really is, because by the time those hundreds of cases, many of them about due process, work their way up to the Supreme Court, all eyes will be on the court, and that is happening right now. Where will they go? Will they stand up to President Trump's ambitions? Will they tell him, here's a place where we can't cross this line with you, Mr. President? Now, remember, he has a majority of justices, conservative justices, many of whom he has appointed in the court. So it's a very conservative court with a very conservative chief justice who may or may not draw the line at some moment in the future that says, Mr. President, this is where you can go no further. And then, and only then, will the democracy be in real peril if President Trump would decide to ignore what the Supreme Court told him to do and do something else. And that, of course, is what everybody on all sides of this issue hope is a moment that does not come.
Well, I mean, these Supreme Court, 6-3 conservative majority, they still, though, are, you know, they're judges. And you get to the Supreme Court because you have a passion for the law, I would imagine. To see someone become a wrecking ball against the law, how does that help you actually even support the idea of having a Supreme Court? Why even have a Supreme Court if you have a president like Trump?
That's, of course, it's a very good point, David, and that's, of course, the dilemma, the hard place that the Supreme Court finds itself in right now. Justice Roberts, who we should tell your listeners that last summer at about this time, Justice Roberts and the Supreme Court gave Donald Trump, the candidate for president, who was also found guilty of a number of felony offenses and was potentially headed to prison, they gave him a gift. They gave the next president a gift in the case Trump versus the United States of America, which said, if you are president of the United States, you cannot be held liable for any crime you might commit as president of the United States. In other words, a kind of get out of jail free card. And John Roberts and this court signed that opinion and gave Donald Trump, especially when he got the second part of this, which is elected president, it was a get out of jail free card of the first magnitude and emboldened him, many people say, emboldened him to decide to press as far as he can on the legal front to test these cases in law, maybe with the intention of getting them to the Supreme Court, a court that had already given him such immunity. So yeah. What we're all watching now as closely as possible is that court, as you suggest, David, are they still at heart judges who understand there's got to be a kind of fairness and we need rule of law,
right.
And that needs to be codified and decided,
yeah.
Or can they do what they seem to be doing in some ways, which is avoiding trying okay. not to confront Trump?
Taking a break here, the source continues after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
It only costs $1.60 per person each year to keep public media alive. But now, the Senate is considering eliminating that funding, putting the essential services you rely on at risk. From trusted journalism to emergency alerts, so much is on the line, and your voice can help protect it. You can contact your senators every day. Ask them to reject these cuts and protect TPR. Visit tpr.org/resiliency to make your voice heard today.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, tomorrow night on PBS and KLRN San Antonio, 9 p.m., Frontline is the new documentary, and they have Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. We're joined by Michael Kirk, the founding producer of Frontline and the producer and director of this latest documentary. You can call in right now to talk about Trump's Power and the Rule of Law, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Brad. Hey, Brad, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. So I want to say... I think Trump operates by blackmail, and I don't think Fox News gets enough credit for being his enforcer. And if a Democrat's going to win, he's going to have to beat Trump and Fox News and Newsmax and the Salem Radio Group and Charlie Kirk and on and on. Those right-wing entertainers is just a formidable opponent.
All right, Brad, thank you for that. So, Michael Kirk, we've talked about Nixon and Watergate before. It's been said if Fox News had been around back then in the 1970s, that Nixon would not have had to resign. Instead, we had the traditional network news, and they held him accountable, and he had to resign. But now the game has changed?
It hasn't. And by the way, I'm not sure how much network news had to do with, maybe. One of the great things about, or one of the horrible things you could, depending on how you look at it, about the past, like the Nixon story, is we don't. Who knows what would have happened if Fox would have existed, or even if a Fox could have existed in those days. We were a different culture, a different country. We had different ambitions, and terrible things hadn't yet happened to our politics, on both sides and in every way. Hard to say. I mean, I think the reason Nixon walked away was because in the end he really believed that he was had. They could get him. They were going to impeach him, and many powerful senators, including very conservative Senator Barry Goldwater, came to the White House and sat with him and said, "You're cooked. You got to go. And if you don't go, it's going to damage the Republican Party for a long, long time. And if you really care about the Republicans, you will go and." And maybe there was a deal cooked where Gerry Ford, President Ford, his vice president, would pardon him forever, which is what happened after he left office. So it may not have very much to do with network news or Fox News in that case. Now, of course, it is the powerful forces of social media on the president's side, the feeling that of such grievance and such anger, which is effectively handled and you could say manipulated by President Trump, is incredible force that he has going for him in this effort to expand executive power. What he's going to have to do is get through all of the courts, all of the legal system, all of the lawyers, very effective, powerful lawyers, who do not want to see him, do not want to see any president get that powerful. The forces arrayed against Donald Trump that are happening in courtrooms and law firms all over the country are formidable. But he's using the power of the government,
the state, to attack his personal enemies.
Yeah. Well, that's what he's testing. Can he do that? Can he get away with it? Will people, I mean, in the end, it may not even be as we were discussing, David. Maybe the Supreme Court is not going to be the place that stops him. Maybe people in our film say it may not work. And what's going to stop a move by any president to grab too much power is going to have to be the people. It is, after all, a democracy. And people, there are midterms coming. If the Democrats can raise formidable candidates and offer an alternative, that's a possibility. And then Congress would have a role in this process. If courts and judges in other places can't make it happen, maybe people standing up and fighting back in all kinds of ways will do it. But that may be what it takes. If you really believe that democracy is in play right now, it may not be that the usual sources that we were taught in grade school and high school, the separation of powers, the Congress, the courts, are going to be able to stop a move by a president who has a tremendous amount of force and power behind him right now. The media, himself, a huge number of Americans who voted for him, 70 million Americans. That's a lot of wind in the sails. And this is the very moment where that is all being tested.
Let's go to Tom. And Tom, you're on the phone. You're on the air. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'm confused. I've read it recently. There's a battle between neoconservative, Leo Strauss philosophy, and kind of an old-fashioned conservative philosophy. What does that mean?
About what does it mean? Elaborate a little bit more, Tom.
Well, there's a Leo Strauss philosophy. Can he explain what that is? I don't know what that is. Apparently, there's a revolution in the Republican Party when the neoconservative Leo Strauss types took over. What does that mean?
All right. Are you familiar with that, Michael?
I don't know who Leo Strauss is, but that doesn't really mean anything. I know that there is inside the Republican Party, as there is inside the Democratic Party, and as there maybe has always been inside of both of those parties, formidable differences of opinion right now in our very divided nation about all kinds of things. Right now, the president seems to be watching his MAGA support, as they say, eating each other alive over the Epstein information, about people who were pedophiles or not pedophiles, people in the government who were powerful, people who participated or didn't participate, who was on the list, was Trump on the list, why is the list no longer available, was there ever a list? This is the Republicans fighting among themselves, based on conspiracies and conspiracy theories that QAnon and others raised over the last 8 or 10 years. So those fights are inside of our political world now, inside of our cultural and political worlds now, in such a formidable way that on top of that, or in the midst of that, or maybe because of that, Donald Trump is testing the outer limits of presidential power. And it really does make it a tenuous time, I think, in America.
Okay, let's go to Juan on the phones. Juan, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. As your guest indicates, Trump is basically trying to push the limits of power to see how much authority he can obtain. With the violence that is many times perpetrated by ICE in detention of both undocumented and U.S. citizens, there is a lot of pushback by demonstrators who are basically now attacking ICE agents, police, and others who are involved in this activity. A lot of it in blue states, which Trump, of course, is targeting to be able to point out this lawlessness. Mm-hmm. And I was curious whether your guest had any idea regarding, or any insight regarding Trump instituting the Alien and Seditions Act in order to be able to acquire more power, and you know, how far that would go. Would it go as far as eliminating habeas corpus?
Right. Juan, thank you for that. So, Michael Kirk, you do talk about how Trump is using immigration as a way to expand his power, and the Supreme Court has gone along with that.
The people we talked to in the film who you know, believe in Trump and work with Trump and believe that what he's doing is the right thing, they will tell you that millions and millions, tens of millions of Americans believe that illegal immigration is something that Trump was elected to do something about. You could make the argument that it's his number one issue. It's also the lowest hanging fruit from his point of view. If you were Donald Trump or you were any president and you wanted to test the limits of your power, you would want to find something that a large number of Americans support. And the idea of fixing the immigration situation in America seems to be something a lot of Americans believe in. And Trump has decided, in testing and wanting to push toward the Supreme Court a big case, he and his people around him have decided, and by the way, they believe this is democracy in action. If others, Michael Luttig and others, worry that this is not democratic, Trump and Bannon and Mike Davis and many of the, Stephen Miller, one of Trump's top aides, they all believe this is absolutely democracy in action. This is what the people want. They want immigration to be fixed, and they are acting democratically from their point of view. They are also testing with a very powerful, low-hanging fruit kind of issue that whether the courts and ultimately the Supreme Court have the stomach for what it means to go out and deport thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if necessary, people from the United States using arcane pieces of law, the Alien and Sedition Act, all kinds of other things that need to be tested in court and are being tested in court, first by federal judges. Trump then fights back. Then they call the judges' names. Then the judges fight back and call Trump names. It's all part of a path toward Justice Roberts and the United States Supreme Court with these cases. It sometimes feels like Trump is winning some of these cases, but really no definitive case has been argued before the Supreme Court in the last term, and maybe in the upcoming term, but the so-called shadow docket of the court, and as they were leaving, you know, going on vacation, shutting down in the last month, those hearings, those findings, mm-hmm. were not law. They were just sending things back to lower courts to be handled a slightly different way or not at all.
Right.
Or...
Taking another break here, we're going to continue with Michael Kirk from Frontline, Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. More on that when we come back from this one-minute break. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Michael Kirk is with us. His newest documentary on PBS Frontline airs tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in San Antonio on KLRN, Trump's Power and the Rule of Law. So, Michael Kirk, why did you want to take on this particular topic, and why now? What did you want to get at? What was your driving question?
Everything that was happening as fast as it was happening. The very night of his inauguration, he's signing, I think, 78 or 79 executive orders. What Steve Bannon, one of his top aides, called muzzle velocity of just the action taking place. I was familiar with that. I knew I'd made films about Trump before, spent a lot of time analyzing him. But in this case, it all felt like something really new and unique was going on. And I wanted to get to the bottom of it, what it meant to expand power if Donald Trump was expanding the power, and how the showdowns he would inevitably cause would affect the country, and I knew that he would go for the law, and I knew that because he was in lots of legal trouble, he had a revenge impulse. He wanted to get even with people who'd been in Washington as part of it. I knew he had a conservative mandate to get rid of the deep state as much as possible, and he was going to use the law to do that as well. So I wanted to find out where were we? Where were conservatives on that side? Where were the courts? Where were the big law firms? What would happen if Donald Trump in the next few months, and it is happening, would do what I expected him to do, which was this: push it, test it, find out how far it could go, make it as bold and as brash and as you know, fiery as only he can do, and how resilient would the democracy be? How powerful would the courts be? Would Trump judges stick with Trump? All of those questions were questions I wanted to have answered, and I think we may not answer the questions fully in the film yet, but we set the table for what is coming and what hopefully your listeners and our viewers can do, which is understand that something really fundamental and big is happening here. And what we wanted to do was arm them with enough of the arguments that they could decide where they wanted to be. Because in the end, all the people in our film said, it's going to come down to the people. It's not going to be Republicans. It's not even going to be Trump that's going to decide. It's going to be whether people want it to happen or not. That is, after all, the one part of our democracy that nobody can own.
You also, you interviewed Mike Davis and Steve Bannon, other ones of defenders of Donald Trump, people who know him, who are close to him. They were unapologetic, to say the least, about what is happening and how Trump is expanding his power. And when you had an exchange, I don't know if it was you, but with Steve Bannon, he was talking about PBS is going to fold. He was challenging, you know, PBS is also part of NPR, we are in the bullseye for Trump trying to, take us out and weaken it. Did you feel any pressure in doing this documentary and in how things are going right now with PBS and NPR?
Well, the really good news is I make films and it's not my job to get involved in the politics of public television. I can tell you this, as you probably know as well, this has been an argument that's been going on since the Nixon era, since public broadcasting got started. And it's here's the thing that I do know from making this film. People in Washington who watch all of this happen tell us Trump is after much more than just rule of law, just, you know, all the things he's testing. He's trying to run the Smithsonian, trying to run the Kennedy Center, wants to close down universities, you know, all of it, and public broadcasting. It's a cultural thing as much as it's a government and a drain the swamp thing. So it's definitely part of the story about how he's trying to use the power of the presidency to do more than just change the laws or change USAID or other agencies. It's about everything the federal government does, FEMA, all of it, and public broadcasting is in there like all the other institutions in the society, and it's a choice viewers and listeners can make, help make.
Let's go to caller Daniel, and Daniel, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk, for everything you are doing. It is immensely appreciated. I'm one individual of limited income who is sacrificing things to hold money to donate to PBS and NPR. But that being said, I just want you to keep that going. And you too, Mr. Davies, I just cannot tell you how much it's appreciated. Very succinctly, I will tell you, Trump is just a con man. He's a crook, et cetera, et cetera. Don't need to go over all that. We know it. But this is not a partisan thing. This affects all of us and our democracy, and it's a shame that it's even gone this far, and it's a shame that people don't have backbones in the Republican Party to stand up to him, and everyone's afraid. Everyone, from the person on the street who serves dinner at a restaurant, perhaps an American citizen who's concerned because of the way they look, that ICE may come and invade their space, to the very top people in Congress who are Republicans. Something needs to be done. That's all I'll say. You're doing it at your end. I think you're a true patriot. I really mean that. My father was a World War II hero, and every time I go to Fort Sam Houston to pay respect, I think of all those soldiers, men and women, who must be rolling over in their graves as we fought Hitler and Mussolini, and now we've got something similar in the White House. I'll let you go. Thank you
all
very much.
Daniel, thank you for that. So you do touch on the atmosphere of fear in Washington, D.C. Was it harder to find sources this time around?
It's not for us, thank God, knock wood. We have a long reputation for fairness, and we assiduously guard it and try to be as fair as we can be while still being useful and straightforward. It's a fine line to try to walk, but it is no, thank God, we have not had getting either Trump people or others. The Trump people have always talked to us because I think they know they'll get a fair shake, even if we are on public television, whatever the stereotype of that is. We've survived 43 years frontline, and we're kind of unpredictable in our politics, and that's been our watchword. And it's sometimes somebody doesn't want to do it because they're afraid. That is really true, but often we can encourage them to do it, and they take a patriotic stand to talk in this film. And Steve Bannon and Mike Davis are true ideologues, pro Trump people. But they know they'll come and they'll get a fair shake for us from us, and they know that we're going to give that the battle is engaged, and that one of the places for it to be engaged is on a television program like Frontline that gets very large ratings and is seen all over the world. So there,
right. and you're laying down a document for the future. This is going to be looked at decades from now. So
that's it. It's the history of it, David. And I always say that to people when I try to talk them into being on the TV show, that yes, it'll go on, and yes, it'll stream, and yes, millions of eyeballs will see it. But man, and it'll show in schools and everything else. But it will also live as a record for future art, people who write books and historians and others. Yeah. And
I'm gonna try and squeeze in one last caller here, Kitty.
Sure.
And Kitty, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am so concerned and confused about how did it happen. It took 4 years to finally get convictions on the former presidents, all of the things he did wrong, and they dropped Mar-a-Lago when he became the papers that were taken out of the Washington, D.C., archives and never put into the archives. And how can he so quickly get everything brought to the Supreme Court when he's president now? It's like they took forever because he knew, all of his lawyers knew how to manipulate the system and the courts. And then if he says something, they immediately take it to the Supreme Court in the last, 4 months of his presidency. Seemingly, that's what's happening. And that's what I don't understand. How has he been able to manipulate the courts to postpone his punishments and then fast forward everything that he, is being brought before judges for, and they're taking it to the Supreme Court, it seems, almost instantly.
All right, Katie, thank you for that. I don't know if anyone knows that answer. I guess he seems to have this way about him.
Well, he in the first place, it took a long time to convict him, so he didn't control those courts, and boy was he mad about it, and boy is he paying people back for all those felony convictions. It was the Supreme Court that gave him immunity as president. Now he's acting on it. He also has spent a lifetime in and out of court, thousands of lawsuits when he was in New York as a developer. He feels really familiar on that ground and knows how to maneuver it. He has some of the best lawyers in America working for him right now, trying to push
the Justice Department.
Yeah, and an entire Justice Department that he has seized control of in a way that's, we didn't even really get around to that, David. I'm sorry, but it's he has a law firm that's called the U.S. Justice Department right now, and that's his right. He can certainly do that, but he's using it for his means, not anything else. So Civil Rights Division and other things are closing down in the Justice Department. They're there for him right now, for his version of lawfare. And he's getting, and for getting even, and for, pushing the buttons that get things that he feels he was elected to do passed.
Or things to enrich himself, things to enrich his allies, punish his enemies. I mean, he has an agenda unlike any president before him. Michael Kirk, thank you so much. He's the founding producer of PBS Frontline and the producer and director of Trump's Power and the Rule of Law, which airs on PBS across the nation tomorrow and at 9 o'clock on KLRN in San Antonio. Michael Kirk, it's always great to have you on the air.
Thank you, David.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.